So this is verse we were. It says, on the other hand. So the other hand is nayad vachaschetra padam harir yasho jagat pavitam pragnita no yet pragnita kaiyet tadvayasam tirtam usanti manasa nayatara hangsa nimanti shikshaya. That's from memory. So the two verses that go right together, and they come from the dialogue between Narada Muni and Vyasadeva, because the sages of Naimisharanya, they've accepted Sudha's declaration that Srimad Bhagavatam is the real means of conquest, success in the age of Kali. But they're still a little curious because Vyasadeva had already compiled so many other literatures. So what's the difference that Srimad Bhagavatam has? How is it unique? And he already done so much, so why did he take up a whole other form of work then? So then Narada Muni is describing that the things he's done so far have too much emphasis on sense gratification, on going to heaven, and living good in this world. You know? And only there's only a small secondary mention of Krishna directly. So therefore, he said this kind of literature is actually like a pilgrimage place for crows. Crows go to eat all kinds of dirty garbage and these kind of things like that. And the swans, they hang out in places and take the nectar of lotus flowers. So on the contrast to these crow-like literatures is the Srimad Bhagavatam. And even though there may be mistakes in the grammar and this and that, the presentation, the analogies, you know, people who are intelligent, they'll just let those go by and they'll get the valuable immortal nectar. And then become immortal by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's we'll go ahead and read the preface. In general, sometimes people skip over the preface of a book or something, but if it's done properly, the preface is one of the most essential parts of the book. The introduction introduces the content, like that. The preface tells you usually what is the purpose of the book. Why is this thing being written? And if you don't know that, then many times the whole rest of the content's a little bit like bewildering. So the preface, we find out what is the purpose of this book, under what circumstances it's being written. Like, for example, Bhagavad Gita is being spoken right before, you know, a thermonuclear war, you know, one-on-one. So these are not idle questions. And the Phaedo, Socrates' last dialogue, is being spoken about the immortality of the soul with a cup of poison right in front of the speaker. Yeah. And then some Bhagavatam being spoken with Maharaj Pariksit, about to be burned to death by the venom of a snake bird. So what is the purpose? Under what circumstances is it being produced? And in the preface, we usually also introduce the author, his qualifications, his nature, and also then the audience. For the book. So in this case, we find, you know, we'll see Maharaj Pariksit adequately introduced, Sukadeva Goswami adequately introduced in the first canto. So the canto acts as a preface to the other 11 cantos. And then the second canto, the principal speaker, Sukadeva Goswami, actually begins to talk like that. So Prabhupada's preface includes all these things, and so it's very intense document, very short, you know. But we printed it up separately and passed it out as like a whole introduction to our movement, our ISKCON, because Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence of Prabhupada's work, and so therefore, you know, this preface actually prefaces the whole of ISKCON, our mission statement, who we are, our character. So it's very, very nice thing to read, to keep putting in perspective in our lives. So it starts off, Prabhupada says, we must know the present need of human society. So you just stop for 1 second there. Prabhupada doesn't start with you. You will get a lot out of this book. He doesn't start with, I'm a great guy, I did this and that. You know, I'm your teacher. He starts off right from the very beginning with a feeling of fraternity, right? We're in this together. Like that. Yeah. And what for? Is it for me? Most books talk about what you can get out of society, right? You're going to get this or that, you know. Yeah. The problem starts off, you know, with the the perspective that we, you and I, have to work together to help human society. The first sentence is right away. Probably may have thought about it a lot. You know, we must know the present need of human society. So it's kind of like a fundamental idea for all preachers, is what's going on in the world. We have to know what's going on like that. We can't live in an ivory tower. And then we have to try and we, you know, not me alone, we have to try and do something about it. It's okay, Ramana? Can you hear me still?
Oh, I'm sorry. You know, it might be easier if somebody on... But anyway, we can hear you. Sorry, it takes me a minute.
Okay. Okay. So I don't want to get my lecture to the walls again. It was.
Here you find the walls are short meeting.
I must say that it, so far, for the first sentence or two, it's absolutely fabulous.
Okay. So next, and the prophet says, and what is that need? And then he goes into one thing too. This is it was spoken, written before Prabhupada left India. You know, a lot of so in some ways, you might see there's some kind of like perspectives from time, place, and circumstance, but other things are just eternal. Prabhupada says, human society is no longer bounded by geographical limits to particular countries or communities. Human society is broader than in the Middle Ages. And right away, Prabhupada is giving a real big perspective on this. He's going back, maybe, you know, looking at the Bhagavatam as a cultural medicine, in terms of maybe something like a 400-year perspective. You know, so therefore, we can kind of expect that the Bhagavatam is not just being written for a bunch of former drug addicted hippies like that in the Lower East Side of New York in 1967, although it's there. But probably right from the very beginning, it's making a contrast with how civilization has developed over hundreds and hundreds of years. And what is the need? When he says the present need of human society, he's talking about something which probably goes back to the Industrial Revolution. Yeah. Human society is broader than in the Middle Ages, and the world tendency is toward one state or one human society. The ideals of spiritual communism, and of course communism was of course very prominent at that time. You know, we all know that. So probably many times which was positioning himself in terms of that, which was a broad cultural and philosophical movement, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, are based more or less on the oneness of the entire human society, nay, of the entire energy of living beings. Yeah. So Prabhupada's talking about, you know, making global peace, global interaction between human beings. But then he also adds in all the animals, everything else too. Yeah? So Srimad Bhagavatam is not just for human beings, it's also for cockroaches, you know, demigods, you know, potatoes, everybody. Yeah. Yeah. The need is felt by great thinkers to make this a successful ideology. Yeah? So we may know, what's his name? Ernst Haeckel? What was his name? He wrote a book called The Mysteries of the Universe right after World War I, and it was one of the biggest selling books in the history of the world, maybe 400,000 copies, which at that time was really big, and translated into many languages. And some Nobel laureates were helping him. And his idea was that with Darwin, we've discovered how all the species came about and how we're advancing. So he proposed then cultural Darwinism, that what's actually happening is different cultures, as they've developed that to that level, the best survive and they eliminate the other ones in the struggle for survival. And so he was presenting this kind of like survival of the fittest cultures. You know? And he actually directly preached
this service is provided by freeconferencing.com. Please enter your access code followed by the pound. This menu will repeat.
He suggested that inferior races should be painlessly but effectively eliminated.
Please re-enter your access code followed by...
Yeah, okay. So, here's Ernst Haeckel. Yeah. So anyway, he was preaching this, but he was just giving the philosophy, the culture. But then one German politician, Adolf Schickelgruber, took it up as an ideology and formed a political party and began to advance this idea. And as he gained popularity, he changed his name from Adolf Schicklgruber to Adolf Hitler. Yeah. And then from this philosophy, from this idea, this whole ideology spread. And it was full of problems, contamination. It didn't produce unity amongst human beings. It produced these unbelievable wars. If you read the history of World War II, this is unbelievable. The death and horrible, inhumanity on. All based upon, an ideology, based upon a theory like that. So Prabhupada said, the need is felt by great thinkers to make this a successful ideology. Srimad Bhagavatam will fill this need in human society. It begins, therefore, with the aphorisms of Vedanta philosophy, Jamariyashya Yataha, 111, to establish the ideal of a common cause. So that's okay, Ramananda?
Sorry, I have to go through all sorts of numbers because I'm on Skype and I had to mute Skype. Sorry, but yes, you are fine, wonderful. Thank you.
So, very, very powerful document. Then Prabhupada goes on. Human society at the present moment is not in the darkness of oblivion. It made rapid progress in the field of material comforts, education, and economic development throughout the entire world. Hmm. In some ways, it's kind of like, what's the word, the dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Dharma, austerity meaning education, and artha, economic development, and kama, sense gratification. Mm-hmm. But there's a pinprick somewhere in the social body at large, and therefore there are large-scale quarrels, even over less important issues like that. So something else is bothering people, but it irritates them, and that leads them then into conflicts over fighting over insignificant things because they have no cultivation of the human spirit, and they get absorbed in these petty things and fighting over things like that. Peru and Chile had an entire war over the excrement. In the boundary area between Chile and Peru on the coast of these islands were these bats had been defecating for maybe, 100 years or something. And the bat excrement is called guano. And it's full of nitrogen, like that. So Peru and Chile engaged in this war, killing each other, over who had the right to the guano, the excrement. And Chile won. So as their victory award, they were knee-deep in bat excrement. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam will fill this need, for it is a cultural presentation for... Oh, yeah, back up here. Sorry. Yeah. There are large-scale squirrels over... Squirrels. Okay. Large-scale quarrels over even less important issues. There is need of a clue as to how humanity can become one in peace, friendship, and prosperity. If you get that peace, friendship, and prosperity, three different things, with a common cause. So we use this phrase a lot in our preaching, in our writing, saying, what is your goal? What do you want to do? You want to make us all put on tilak and shave up, stick us in saris? See, no, we're trying to develop an ambience where everybody can be at peace and in friendship with each other and prosperity. So it's a very nice phrase. Srimad Bhagavatam will fill this need, for it is a cultural presentation for the re-spiritualization of human society. Again, almost all these things can be used like with great, great potency in your preaching. This is very interesting. Srimad Bhagavatam should be introduced also in the schools and colleges. Yeah? For it is recommended by the great student devotee, Prahlad Maharaj, in order to change the demoniac face of human society. So practically speaking, this is the only Sankirtan platform or method in some ways that Prabhupada directly presents in the whole preface. is school academic preaching. Of course, later on, it developed into so many aspects of preaching. But Prabhupada, you know, sometimes we think, well, the schools and colleges, kind of like secondary thing. But Prabhupada's emphasizing it from the very beginning, you know, as getting out into the schools and the colleges and getting our message out. Then Prabhupada quotes Prahlad Maharaj saying, Komara acharep pragnyo dharman bhagavata iha durlabham manusham janma tadapi adruvam artadam. Yeah. So the basic idea is that Komaram acharep pragnyo, even from the very, very little child of Kumar, age of 5 years old, one should actually begin to investigate into what is the permanent gain that's possible in humans as a human form of life like that. You know? Because people, they struggle for so many things, and it all goes by, and then they say, well, that was it. What did we get? You know, all this struggle. So Prahlad Maharaj, of course, very, very beautiful story, very beautiful analogy. Again, you can tell this to people like that. You know, my old granddaddy used to say, like that, Jayananda used to do that all the time. Well, I don't know, but my grandpa used to say that, hey, you know, from the time when we were little kids and what happens, you start playing like anything, you don't want to go to school. But then later on you start going to school and start having agitation from boys and girls. And then you get, as a result of that, caught up in the region, you have to make money, you know. And then finally, you know, after you finish all that, you're so old and your mind is so feeble in your health that you have no strength to investigate into what is the absolute truth, you know. Yeah. So, you know, probably making this comment, you know, disparity in human society is due to a lack of principles. Disparity in human society is due to a lack of principles. Lack of principles. Okay? It's not due to a lack of money, food, sex, or shelter. It's due to a lack of principles. Not even due to a lack of techniques, right?
And technology. To return to the conference.
But due to a lack of principles. In a godless civilization.
To join the subconference, press the number of subconference. Press the number of
subconference. Okay. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. We're back. Sorry, okay. Skype dropped. Okay. Now we're back.
It's okay. Okay. So the problem is a lack of principles, not a lack of techniques and management, MBA people, or a lack of products. Lack of principles in a godless civilization. Prabhupada says there is God, or the Almighty One, from whom everything emanates. Okay, his definition of God. God is the cause of all causes. Bhagavad Gita 10.8. Again and again, it's our definition of God. Jamani Asya Yataha. I believe in one God, Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth, by whom all things are created. Same for the Christians. By whom everything is created, everything is maintained, and in whom everything merges to rest. Material science has tried to find the ultimate source of creation very insufficiently. This is maybe 50 years later, and still it's a fact. All these creation stories from the science are still so far away. But it is a fact that there is one ultimate source of everything that be. This ultimate source is explained rationally and authoritatively in Beautiful Bhagavatam or Srimad Bhagavatam. So both things. It's a very rational, clear explanation as you go through the Bhagavatam. But also, in the end, we have to hear from an authority who knows. And because of our nature, when we're hearing from somebody who knows, we know that he knows. We have an intrinsic ability to perceive, you know, spiritual authority like that. But because it's covered by so much confusion now, then we also need, you know, to have direct evidence we can experience and also have a logical explanation. Srimad Bhagavatam is the transcendental science, not only for knowing the ultimate source of everything, yeah, but, so the source of everything, but also we're gonna, what else are we going to know? Our relation with Him. God. and our duty toward perfection of human society on the basis of his perfect knowledge. So like some Bandeya, you know, God is the creator, the cause of all causes, Abhideya, how can I function to revive that relationship and act properly? It is powerful reading matter in the Sanskrit language, and it is now rendered into English elaborately, so that simply by a careful reading, one will know God perfectly well. So much so, a reader will be sufficiently educated to defend himself from the onslaught of atheists. It's quite an accomplishment. Over and above this, the reader will be able to convert others to accepting God as a concrete principle. When I say this, I'm remembering one incident. I was waiting on the platform in the Bay Area Rapid Transit system in San Francisco. And they have these trains that go underground, everything else, very modern. And I was standing there in my dhoti, kurta, everything else, waiting for the train, other people. And one very, you know, well-dressed Indian guy walked over in suit and tie, and he said, you are worshiping Indian God, but you are wearing man-made shoes. And I had some, like, you know, vinyl sandals on or something like that, you know, like that. So I was suddenly being faced with the onslaught of atheism. And so then I remembered, you know, Jambavan's prayers to Krishna. And he said, people admire a great scientist and a big brain and how he can manipulate material nature. But Jambavan said, but you, my dear Lord, are the creator of these creators of universal affairs, like that. So I mentioned that okay, these are, you know, man-made, but then where did this intelligence come from? Like that, so on. So we had a little discussion on that. And actually, he was an honest person. So as we were discussing it, he actually became... I didn't push it too much because he had to digest it. he could see that he accepted that he had some food for thought when the train came like that, you know. And so I left him with his food for thought and got on the train. So what is this? Is this that we've had the association of the Mahabhagavat, Srila Prabhupada, and the Bhagavatam? We systematically see these simple answers like that, you know. Defend ourselves, and then also convert other people. Accepting God is a concrete fact. Srimad Bhagavatam begins with the definition of the ultimate source. It is a bona fide, or in Latin, bona fide, commentary on the Vedanta Sutra by the same author, Srila Vyasa Dev. And gradually it develops into 9 cantos up to the highest state of God realization. The only qualification one needs to study this great book of transcendental knowledge is to proceed step by step, cautiously, and not jump forward haphazardly like an ordinary book. So you should take our ISKCON Bhakti Shastri Bhakti Bhai Bhava courses available at your local temple for only $100 a year. Plus whatever you can donate. Yeah, so we have to, Prabhupada says again and again, systematic study like that. Get the association of devotees to fix your mind. You know? Actually, you can actually contemplate the content of the book, you know, not just logically, but go beyond the logic of one thing after another and contemplate it. Take it in a holistic fashion, coordinated thought parcels. Yeah? And these things can take up residence in your heart. And we go through systematically reading, studying, discussing. And as we go through, you know, then we take it to heart. And then we can go on to the next part and start to assimilate that. The reading matter is so arranged with its original Sanskrit text, its English transliteration, synonyms, translation, and purports, so that one is sure to become a God-realized soul at the end of finishing the first 9 cantos. Sure, God-realized soul. Of course, one can realize God is Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Varanti tat tat vavidas
वेदन्ति तत्तत्त्व विद्यतत्त्व ज्ञानं देयं जमेति परमात्मनि
भगवान् इति शब्दे इस माय पार्टनर हियर हरि लीला. The 10th canto is distinct from the first 9 cantos because it deals directly with the transcendental activities of the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna. One will be unable to capture the effects of the 10th canto without going through the first 9 cantos. Yeah. Then why did Prabhupada give us the Krishna book? Well, because he put the first 9 cantos in there. And if you see, whenever there's a difficult point, Prabhupada, you know, then says, what is the perspective on this? The Krishna book, in some ways, is for people to really get the full benefit, is for pretty advanced persons. And like that, they've got to be able to understand, oh, yeah, I'm not the body. We understand that. Yeah, there is a God. Yeah, yeah, these things. Yeah, we have to do austerities. Yeah. And then the Krishna book, for those kind of people, can be their main food. If at heart, they're already purified like that. If not, then the first canto starts off with very basic fundamental ideas, you know, almost Upanishadic, and takes us through different incarnations, different levels. Okay. The book is complete in 12 cantos, each independent, which may refer to the fact that Prabhupada was going to print them, I think, separately. But it is good for all to read them in small installments, one after another. So this is one that we feel that a lot of these retreats, where you try and do your Bhakti Shastri degree in 6 weeks of study, 10 hours a day. And the result is many times that both the teachers and the students don't want to read Prabhupada's books for months afterwards. You know? So better is that you have every day Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, your Bhagavatam class in the morning, get in the evening, Krishna book before you take rest, and maybe something, you know, before lunch, you get on the phone or stop, sit with people, and read Prabhupada-lila-amrita. But better small digestible portions, you know, but regularly. You know? And then by the 12th canto will become self-realized. Hmm. And Prabhupada says, I must admit my frailties in presenting Srimad Bhagavatam, but still I am hopeful of its good reception by the thinkers and leaders of society on the strength of the following statement of Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.11. Tadvad Vishargo Janataga Viplavo Yasmin Padishlokam Abadavati Api Namani Anantashya Yishon Kitani Yat Shinvanti Gayanti Granti Sarvaha. Yeah. Yeah. And again, this is this verse, these two verses Prabhupada quotes many times. For the Bhakti Bhai Bhava degree, you were supposed to memorize, 50 verses for the first 6 cantos. But that's over a period of 4 years. You know? So we're trying to set a standard of one verse a week. And it's working out pretty nice. Myself, you know, I like it. Put it, you know, if you're a grihastha, put the verse on your refrigerator door and make this rule that every time before you open the refrigerator, you have to chant the verse. You know? And the devotees say it's amazing how fast they learn the verse like that. You know? Of course, as a grihastha, as a sannyasi, I haven't got a refrigerator. But so I mean, I put it on top of my laptop, and every time before I open my laptop, look at the little Krishna movie or whatever. And I'll chant the verse. Yeah. And this is it. You know, take some of the Srimad Bhagavatam right into your heart. Sanskrit, English. Contemplate the Sanskrit. Yeah. Intense, the beauty, and the specific meaning. But these are verses again and again. Yeah. That Prabhupada quotes. Yeah. Yeah. Go down then. Next part. We lose our audience.
No. All right, we're all here. Sorry, it takes a while.
Hey, you got to roll your screen down. Roll
oh,
your screen
I'm
up.
Sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm yeah. Sorry. How's that?
Oh yeah, see it. Okay. Oh, Om Tat Sat.
So you're dependent on my screen. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Om Tat Sat, AC Bhaktivedanta Swami, Delhi, December 15th. 1962. So 1962 from 2012. This is about 60 years, isn't it? Yeah, 50 years ago. But it seems so relevant, so like, you know, completely modern. And in many ways, I don't think people, they really feel like Prabhupada's gone. I mean, devotees are really preaching and chanting. He's right here, you know, in a very practical way like that. 50 years, and almost nothing needs to be adjusted in this to make it practical. Maybe the only small thing about, you know, spiritual communism, you know, adjusted because of the communist movement, of course, that failed. The Industrial Revolution is about to fail. I don't know. But that, to me, that's our real big enemy, is the Industrial Revolution and the industrialization of knowledge, that science became like that, you know, so on. So, again, it's a very wonderful thing just to go through and read and to share people. And if someone is going to be reading Bhagavatam for the first time, you know, systematically, Bhakti by Baba, then we include this in the discussion, the contemplation, because Prabhupada puts it here. Wonderful perspective. And you can see he's dealing with all the advanced topics later on, but he's bringing them right into the preface like this to orient us to what we're trying to do. Now, we are trying to work together to understand what people need, and what they need is to be able to understand that we're all brothers and sisters. I remember one time in India there was a toll booth, and like I think it was one right at Hulurghat, where you cross from the ISKCON side over to Navadweep. And there was an argument over who was supposed to be taking the taxes from that toll booth on the river there, the Communist Party or something, you know. So the both guys were pushing each other, and this kind of fighting developed, maybe like between about 20 people, maybe about 150 people all gathered around to watch. And I saw one guy, he knocked down an opposing guy, and then he helped him back up. You know, after he got back up, they started fighting again. So if you ever experience fighting with your brothers and sisters, or sometime when you're your child, you know, maybe you have the same thing as you're fighting, but you never forget the fact that actually we're brothers and sisters. You know? And in some ways, this fighting is more, you know, gratification than it is like to, you know, to bother anybody. Like, you know, like the fighting in Prabhupada says, the fighting in married life is a necessary part of marriage, the fun in married life. You know? Nobody should be too disturbed by this. So when that background perspective is there, one historian told us that many historians say that World War I was the first war where all kinds of nobility and culture were just eliminated for the most part. And the whole principle became this industrialized principle of just killing as many people as you could, however you could do it, like that. You know? Yeah, and before that, I think there were people with that mentality. You know, the Civil War in America was ghastly and things like that, other wars too. But in many ways, there was always this idea of honor and dignity, you know, in war. But he was saying that First World War became an industrialized thing at that point, a mechanized process, with only the objective of the external result, which was killing people, you know? And no concern for how you did it and with a result of honor and dignity for your country, like that, or mercy. Yeah. So that's it. It's about it for me. Then after this, then from the introduction, he'll introduce the content. Basically, as you're remembering, he'll kind of like summarize the first verse. You know, about what is the absolute truth and things like that. What is the cause of all causes? Then there's a biography of Lord Chaitanya, because without Lord Chaitanya's mercy, he says it's very difficult to appreciate Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, I think we say it's impossible. Then the matter actually starts. First chapter is mostly 60-40% of the whole chapter is something is the purports to the first three verses. The prelude, Prabhupada calls it. And then there's the first canto, there's Sutta and the sages talking. What is this world? What is the problem? What is the solution? How to go there? Srimad Bhagavatam. The solution is Srimad Bhagavatam. And then the next three chapters is Narada and Vyasa, and how Narada got the impetus, Vyasa got the impetus to write Srimad Bhagavatam. He did that. Vyasa then describes the background. Now he gives a preface. The birth of Maharaj Parikshit, the disappearance of the Pandavas, disappearance of Dhritarashtra and Kunti and Vidura, like that. of Maharaj Pariksit taking control, running the world, and then Kali sneaking in, and Krishna leaving the planet, and the necessity of a new incarnation, and then that's how Srimad Bhagavatam is produced in the meeting of Sukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Pariksit. So very systematic, even the parts, when Vyasadeva is describing the background, you can divide it practically into three parts. First, he's just going to describe the birth of Maharaj Pariksit and the disappearance of the Pandavas. But maybe because he wanted to step back and give a little broader perspective, he goes back then to how Ashwatthama was punished and how Bhishma Dev left and how Krishna returned to Dwarka. Then it skips ahead to birth of Maharaj Pariksit again, gets back to that again, disappearance of Dhritarashtra, and the disappearance of the Pandavas and Krishna. And finally, the last part then is directly, the causes in the meeting of Maharaj Pariksit and Sukadeva Goswami. And that's the whole preface, the first canto. So any questions or comments? Anybody in our great public audience there?
I've got almost everybody in. All right, now I muted everybody. But a great introduction, Maharaj. Anyone have a question or a comment?
I'll just comment on the second sentence. Prabhupada says, human society is no longer bounded by geographic limits to particular countries and communities. I was thinking, boy, how true that is in this day and age. I mean, even 50 years ago when Prabhupada wrote that, things were relatively isolated. I mean, aircraft was quite crude. Telecommunication was very poor. Almost really, really difficult to make a phone call. Most communications that were intercontinental in particular were done through telegraph. Letters would take weeks, sometimes months. If at all, they would reach their destination. And now, with the advent, particularly of the internet, you'd send a telegraph or something in bygone ages. Now, if there's any type of a upheaval in some remote part of the world, you can just see it live on with iPhones and so on. It's just amazing how interconnected the whole world is and how much so that's changed in just the last 10 years. It's the planet's become really, really small, and the interface is such that for us it's a great, great opportunity. Just like we're doing now, this is a perfect example. The fact that we could have this Sangha, and we just really need to take advantage, as we're seeing many devotees are having that vision, taking the advantage, real Yukta Vairagya, of utilizing the technology that's happened now that's made the planet so small. It makes it really practical to preach and spread this consciousness throughout the world and the most remote places so easily. So Prabhupada said that 50 years ago that we're not so bound by geographic limitations, but now it's just mind-boggling.
Back to I remember one time that was interesting. During Prabhupada's time, there was a press conference with Richard Nixon, President of the United States of America, and one younger reporter was getting a little like aggressive, like impudent, and challenging him and questioning him. So Nixon kind of paused the meeting and looked at him, and he said, "You don't know who I am, do you?" And the guy said, "What do you mean?" He said, "I can walk in the next room and make one phone call, and within 45 minutes, over 100 million people would be dead." I said, "Mr. President." Yeah. That was such an impressive thing. Like you say, not only is it like sending messages and sending these things, but the destructive power is so terribly balance. It's amazing, too, it's gone, it's reduced. Before the nuclear submarines, each of these dudes had one missile that would carry 12, you know, smaller missiles. But because of agreements now, they've taken 11 off, and the 8 missiles or whatever it's on board only have one 40-ton bomb on board them. So it actually has been progress, and I would say, again, how much is that because of Srila Prabhupada, you know, because of devotees? You know, wherever they go, whoever you meet, just introduce, you know, Krishna consciousness. Okay.
I have something to add, something that Prabhupada wrote when he was at Radha Damodar temple before he came. It was around the time he was translating the Bhagavatam. And it was found and published in a book called The Ultimate Search for, I can't remember the title exactly, but anyway, it's very interesting. Prabhupada talks about the common problems with the human section. It starts with Ramananda Roy's first offering to Mahaprabhu, you know, what the goal of life is, and he offers up Varnashram first, and then Mahaprabhu, you know, he's telling it's external. So anyway, Prabhupada's going through the explanation, and then he gets around to, you know, the main problems of birth, death, old age, and disease, and he starts to rail on the scientists. You know, they can't solve the birth problem, and he explains that. Now he gets to the death problem. So this is the section I want to read. It's not very long. It's a short paragraph. And Prabhupada says, the death problem is also not solved. None of the scientific knowledge of the human being has solved the death problem. The advancement of material knowledge can simply accelerate the problem of dying. Nobody can save a person from the cruel hands of death. The discovery of the atom bomb and similar other great inventions of the fertile brain of the scientist has simply increased the death problem. The foolish scientists do not know that the atom bomb is actually the scheme of Mother Nature, who is sure to kill the demoniac population when it increases disproportionately. That's pretty heavy.
Remember the old commercials that said, don't try and cheat Mother Nature?
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, you mentioned in your commentary this morning that
my harangue.
There was a turn towards industrialization in Europe. And with it, there was a shift in philosophy. And a lot of the philosophers, Berkeley and some of these philosophers previously were theistic. And now you have, the advent of Darwin and Karl Marx and, you know, people getting excited about trying to explain things without God. And there's a famous quote, and it's attributed to Francis Bacon, and it goes something like this, that we must torture nature's secrets from her in a very exploitive mentality. And it's no longer God-centered. You know, what's good for man is good, and anything goes for that end. So as soon as you put man in the center and you remove God from the center, it becomes selfish and exploitive. And then there's all these conflicts because, I remember years ago, the United States was chastising Brazil for ruining the rainforest, which is a major ecosystem, you know, for the whole planet. And Brazil just couldn't believe that the United States was telling them how to manage their natural resources. You know? So it belongs to them. Nothing belongs to God. It belongs to Brazil. It belongs to the U.S. It belongs to mankind. And we, you know, we can use it for whatever end we choose. It's pretty demonic.
There's also there's a book called R.D. Lang. He wrote a famous book called The Politics of Experience. And it was about how different cultures judge different people in terms of being crazy or being saintly, you know, in terms of their particular cultural perspective like that. So then, when he retired, very pretty famous person, you can look him up on Wikipedia, R.D. Lang, L-A-I-N-G. He wrote a book called The Voice of Experience, after The Politics of Experience. And actually, he was looking at this whole scientific industrialization, because he went side by side, and he quoted from Huxley, you know, who was one of the protagonist for Darwin. He was really the guy who was like preaching Darwin's ideas so much. And it's a terrifying thing. When I quote this in public classes, I had to say three things. Three times I had to say this. This is not my philosophy. This is his philosophy. But he says, nature is a woman. And like any woman, she cannot be trusted. This is not my philosophy. Yeah. Only if she can never possibly take care of her children and give them adequate nourishment by herself, only when she's directed by masculine intelligence, this is not my philosophy, can she actually do this. And he describes how she has to be restricted by iron chains, she has to be injected with iron needles. It's terrifying. You know, and that's his idea of nature, that nature is our enemy. Women are out to get us, and we men have to control them, inject them, you know, and force them to. Oh, it's really unbelievable how terrifying the thing is. But that was the actual, you know, perspective that pretty much went into the beginning. You see, it's manifested in agriculture. Agriculture, which maybe is some of the most human endeavor in the world or something, to eat, you know, simply and take care of your body. It becomes such an industrialized, unbelievable thing now. You know? I mean, it's almost impossible to get food that has any flavor. You know? It's incredible, you know, and it's not toxic. You know? So maybe, I see symptoms that indicate that maybe, you know, that people are beginning to have an opportunity to make some change. And so again, talking, wherever you go, wherever you meet, if you can become a big preacher and, you know, distribute millions of books and take charge of nations, then do it. It's like that. But if you can just, you know, smile at somebody in the streets or something, you know, and make them smile back, you know, as Prabhupada says, pure devotee makes so many people devotees just by his smile. You know? So wherever you go, wherever you meet, you always stay pure in the morning, good program, get your intelligence fixed, and then you go out and face the day, keep it fixed. You know, and contact people, and in the evening come back, and we form ourselves from all the onslaughts of Maya, and then we're guaranteed to be successful. You know. Any final comments or questions?
Maharaj, yep. My wife was just telling me one of her friends was invited by Monsanto to get a big position in their country. So he didn't know much about Monsanto. He was just kind of isolated because he's got an agricultural background. So they took him to their facilities, and they showed him one film where they were really proud because they had just developed this type of potato that, especially with potato bugs, when they attack the potato, they'll just take one bite out of it or suck out of it, whatever they do, and they immediately drop dead. not only potato insects, but parasites, but almost, I think it's 85 different percent of the bugs, you know, around. As soon as they take a bite, they immediately die. So he paused for a minute and he was thinking, my God, I wonder what happens to when we bite into it. But they were really proud for how they're controlling material nature.
I'm a German, so I can say this. Carl Jung said, a German is somebody who would invent suspenders for socks and expect you to thank him. Yeah. Yeah, you read the chapter on Divine and Demoniac. It's so incredible, isn't it? Engaged in horrible, ghastly works meant to destroy the world. But still they think that they're the most great and beneficial, you know, people for all human society. But it's going to get worse. It's going to get worse. You know? And that's the idea of Kali Yuga, is even imbeciles like us are forced to become serious like that. Okay, I guess we should go now. We're going to do this weekend symposium.
Can you,
if you wouldn't mind, I'd just like to ask one quick question. By the way, the way you went through this with a fine-tooth comb and explained everything was really, really very good. The way that Srila Prabhupada wrote this, he put a lot of thought and energy into every single word that's in this preface. It's towards the beginning of the preface, it says that Srimad Bhagavatam will fill this need for a common cause, for it's a cultural presentation for the re-spiritualization of human society. When he says a cultural presentation, many times Srila Prabhupada would point out that we are not, it doesn't matter if you're a Christian or a Jew or whatever designation you have, this is a science of how to become God-conscious. We're not promoting a particular type of music or dress. So what does he mean here by a cultural presentation for a common cause?
What comes to my mind is that when you go through Srimad Bhagavatam, you think, for example, like Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it's only like, 1,700 verses or something. It's like, 10% of the size of the Bhagavatam. And it's like, Upa Goswami, when you go to a museum or something, or you have the green line and the yellow line and the white line, so the white line will take you, 1 hour, the other one will take you 20 minutes, the other one will take you 5 minutes, So the Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, is for those people who are just taking the essence of Bhakti Yoga and using it to go to the point of complete purification quickly, But for those of us who can't do it or who need something else at different levels, then there is Daivi Varna Ashram, pregnancy of Ditti in the evening, the marriage of Kardama and Devahuti, the conflict between the sages and the doorkeepers at Vaikuntha, So all these are like stories, about people and human culture, Varnashram culture. And in that sense, it's universal. And the Varnashram principles about what is the nature of women, what is the nature of men, what is the nature of people as they go through the different stages in the life cycle, from childhood to youth to adulthood to old age. These are universal, And they may be expressed in different ways in terms of different cultures, But we'll find that certain principles just are universal in terms of if you actually have a culture, which is a cultured civilization, whether it's Confucius or Socrates or Solomon, or Ramanuja or Shankara or Sri Chaitanya. Certain principles are there that, will cultivate the human spirit like that. So that's what I would understand.
Very good. Thank you, Maharaj.
Krishna Maharaj, may I ask a quick question,
please?
Maharaj, you know, the verse we read, it says Tad Bagbisago. Now that verse, right, it says that these transcendental literatures, they are, even though they are irregularly composed, so it's actually referring to the original Sanskrit that is irregularly composed, or is it saying that they may be irregularly composed?
I understand, again, it's just the literary ornaments and things like that. But yeah, sometimes there may be, if you go as a strict person in Sanskrit grammar or something, you know, and like when we go out on the Sankirtan and they say, hey, look here, brother, you know, like that. So that's not like the Queen's English, you know. But we get the idea across. In the first canto, there's this comment by the sages to Sutta that you know all these things, you have all these abilities. You don't know certain things about the exact technical details of the Sanskrit for the hymns and prayers that the priests do. Again, as explained to me, especially in South India, the actual rituals and prayer and things in the Vedas, the boys learn them. You know, they have a certain culture, family, brahmacharya. They learn to chant every syllable the exact length. They learn it forward. They learn it backwards. They learn it every other syllable. And they all chant it together, maybe every 11 years, a big sangha with maybe 1,000 people chanting together at the same time. So in that way, the United Nations has declared it a heritage of humanity, and therefore it can get all kinds of donations and support and protection. And people say this is probably the most you know, accurate thing we have that's been passed down since God, no one knows how old it is. So there are the exact, you know, exact things in there in terms of perfect composition in Sanskrit. But then Sutta Goswami, he tells them, I heard this from Sukadeva Goswami, he heard it from his father, Yata Idam Yata Mati. He says, and now I shall try to make you experience it as I experienced it. So that's the point, that the Puranas and these things, Bhagavatam, is trying to list different stories and different things like that to get the person to actually experience, you know, the different levels of Krishna's manifestation, you know, and then finally different levels of incarnations. So that's what I understand is referring to, is that the exact Sanskrit literary rules of ornamentation and stuff may not be there. And sometimes Prabhupada says things. One time when the Prabhupada says in the tape, after seeing Krishna in Vrindavan, when Krishna, you know, showed him his powerful form, Lord Brahma, memorizing this, paid his obeisances again and again. So they translate in the Krishna book, the devotees said, I've remembered this. And there are many things like that. If you, you know, you try and speak a foreign language, sometimes you make these things about memorize. You make these little mistakes in the grammar. So I would say that, yeah, that those are improv as books sometimes, and then we're supposed to correct them, you know. In Spanish, one lady was very disturbed in the class in Guayaquil, in Ecuador. She said the Sunday feast, she said, I like your philosophy so much. I'm reading your books, and I'm so attracted. But I have a big problem. I'm about 45 years old. And she said, because I have a bakery, you know. And in your books, it says that bread is for satisfying illicit desires. So the boy was thinking, what is this? Don't say that in our books. Huh? So then she went to the Upadeshan region, opened it up, and it said one satisfies his illicit desires with LSD, marijuana, opium, pan, haritaki, and betel. So if you know Spanish, you got it right away. The word for bread in Spanish is pan. You know? So we were laughing and thought, no, it's a different kind of pan, Mataji. So yeah, so we have to do this job, a little job maybe compared to Vyasadeva or Prabhupada. But we have to get people to get the right experience and say, you know, that's correct, this is a little detail in the exact grammar and stuff like that. That's what I would understand.
Yeah, thank you very much indeed.
Bye. Okay, so we're going to go now because we have to go get ready for our big symposium on cultivation of the human spirit tomorrow, and it's coming on pretty well. Even a dog can take part. And Garuda, we visited Garuda this weekend over in Virginia, Radhika Raman. He took us to visit Professor Ken Rose. We interviewed him. And when you get a perspective of the Bhagavatam, people, they wake up. They say, yeah, that's a lot of what I know. Thank you. So I thank you all very much. And I guess we'll see you all next week. they will actually
be
able
to attend. Thank you, Maharaj.
All right.
Ramananda.
Jai Haribo.
Ramananda.
Yes. Yes.
Can you hang on just one second?
Thank you. Haribo.
I'm Vivek. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear.
Okay.
Hello?
I just wanted to say one last thing, or I just wanted to get down.
It looks like everybody's exiting out.
Yeah, it's whatever. I think I would like to have a talk with Maharaj or anybody that does that. I don't know. It's a little... Okay, no problem.
You all right.
Know, I'm just going to tell you, okay? This, you know, this thing about Monsanto is a big deal. It's global. Prabhupada, his whole approach was global in his preaching. And this Monsanto, I'm sure he would, you know, have something to say. But anyway, I wanted to say something that Monsanto, their propaganda is they want to solve world hunger. That's their idea. Are you still there?
Yes.
Okay.
There's still about a dozen devotees on right now.
Okay. Anyway, also the U.S. government and the Canadian government and Bill Gates and other big, you know, wealthy people are behind Monsanto with this idea. And some of them may be ignorant enough to think that there's some truth to this proposal. But I heard Srila Prabhupada in a lecture in L.A. I've been listening to this the last few days, on the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, and he was, you know, he was disturbed with a question after the class about world hunger. And his response was that it's something that the human section has brought on themselves. And he asked if anyone had ever seen an animal dying of starvation or a bird dying of starvation. And he made the point that the Lord has provided sufficient food for all living entities here, including millions of elephants that have to eat 100 pounds of food at a time. So this world hunger, it's politically influenced. And it's basically a mismanagement of resources, including the fact that most of the grains that are being grown globally are being fed to animals for slaughter.
Can I add another point?
Sure.
Yeah, I was a few weeks ago, I was in the news. They were saying that in India, one third of all the food that is grown there it goes to waste. It just rots because there's not sufficient or adequate storage or distribution facilities. So
wow.
One third of all the food they grow just gets thrown out and rots in the street. That's
wow.
A lot of food.
Right.
That's a lot of food.
That's a lot of mismanagement. Because there's ways you can store it.
Mismanagement, for sure.
Right.
India is a complete mess right there as far as management. You know, the pollution of the rivers there, the Jamuna, is like a sewer right now. Because
right.
They just don't have... They're allowing this raw sewage to flow down the river. There's more sewage than there is water in that river.
Their infrastructure is a mess. You know, they're not doing things properly. But I'll tell you, the other thing I wanted to say, and Maharaj mentioned about preaching, and India is an unlimited preaching field right now. And everybody should hear this loud and clear, anybody that has any kind of an idea to preach, especially a Westerner. You know, if they have some desire to serve Srila Prabhupada in that way, you know, don't waste your time with a bunch of people that are not interested in hearing Srimad, you know, the Bhagavatam or Srila Prabhupada's message. You just go over to India and you'll find millions of people ready to hear that. That's all. I just wanted to say that.
Well, thank you, Prabhupada. All right. Hi. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.
Jai Srila Prabhupada.
Haribol.
Haribol.
Thank you for your association.
Haribol.
Ramananda, still there?